She now grows precious produce for one of the world's top 50 restaurants, which would be David Kinch's Manresa in Los Gatos, California. Today, her biodynamic incantations lead us to ask, what in the method makes a difference?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 778th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or for, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Firenze who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, there are millions of restaurants in the world. For one of them to become among the best, or at least among the 50 best, it must be different. One element that makes David Kinch's Manresa restaurant different in one of the restaurant magazine's world's top 50 is the produce it serves from Love Apple Farms. Cynthia Sandberg's Love Apple Farms employs the biodynamic technology first articulated in the 1920s by Austrian writer, educator, and social activist Dr. Rudolf Steiner. Biodynamics is focused on developing the fertility of the soil and the life that soil supports through the various physical and spiritual means, including the application of fermented manures, minerals, and herbs, as well as cooperating with the phases of the moon and the alignment of the planets. In establishing this partnership, David Kinch and Cynthia Sandberg have formed a loop that encloses farm, restaurant, and diners. That Cynthia Sandberg's farm helps David Kinch's restaurant maintain its position as one of the world's 50 best restaurants leads us to ask, what in biodynamics makes a difference? And who better to ask than the quintessential metropolitan farmer herself, Cynthia Sandberg. Cynthia, welcome back.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, gosh, 220 Food Chain radio shows have passed since we last talked. And when we last talked, you and David Kinch joined me in the studio here. And you were just beginning this relationship. You had a little tiny farm garden in Ben Lomond, California, and now you're giant sized. Boy, yeah, you took over the former Smothers Brothers vineyard. You turned it into a biodynamic farm. You have become a world resource for teaching people how to do things right. So, what was the firecracker that turned you on, that lit you up?
About biodynamics?
Yeah.
It was a firecracker. I'd gone up to Copia. I don't know if you recall Copia up in Napa.
Yeah.
It was built to become a mecca for food and wine up there. Mm-hmm. I think they had Julia Child on board for that. They had a beautiful garden there. And I had gone up there to take a tour of the grounds, and I'd seen a tomato plant growing in October, which normally, if a tomato is growing in October, it's at the end of its life cycle. It's typically looking pretty poor.
Pretty mushy.
Yeah, and I had seen this tomato plant, and I had never seen a more beautiful, vigorous, alive, glowing with force and energy and bounty than I had at Copia in October, and I was stunned by that because I'd already been a tomato grower for many, many years. And I sought out the gardener there and asked. His name is Jeff Dawson, huge name in biodynamics. And I asked him, Jeff, how do you get a tomato to grow that well and that beautiful in October? And he said just one word to me, biodynamics. And I said, what's that? I hadn't heard about it. He said, he got a look on his face like he was a little bit tired of explaining it to folks, and I recognized that look because I, you know, sometimes I get tired of explaining
sure,
things over
yeah.
and over and over and again. And he said, just Google it. And I said, okay. So I went back home and I Googled it, and I found out all this seemingly crazy stuff about horns and manure stuffed in cow horns and terrestrial forces, and the cow is absorbing the earth's terrestrial forces through her hooves, and her horn is absorbing cosmic forces like an antenna into her gut, and then she exudes the manure. And I thought, holy cow, literally, holy cow. I thought, what the heck is all of this about? And I would have immediately dismissed it, and I would have immediately just clicked over to something, you know, more familiar on the internet. But if I hadn't seen that tomato plant growing, if I hadn't seen that tomato in October growing, I wouldn't have believed it. And so I started researching it, and started putting in some of the basic tenets into my farm at that time, 7 years ago. I'd also started taking, I tried to find classes. Where the heck can I learn more about this? Because at that time, all of the publications that I had purchased and started to read books, none of these were good enough primers for me to really put into motion on my farm step by step how to do it. So I eventually found a series of classes up at Steiner College in Fair Oaks, right next to Sacramento.
And if there was going to be a place where you could learn about Rudolf Steiner, maybe Steiner College would be the place, right?
That seemed like a good name to me. I went up there and started taking classes and workshops on biodynamic farming, and started inputting those principles into my small micro metro farm, if you will, in Ben Lomond.
How did you start? I mean, you were an organic farmer, right? You didn't use pesticides or herbicides or anything in your little tiny farm in Ben Lomond. But how did you start integrating the whole biodynamic technology into that?
Well, that's the tough part for people who want to learn how to do that. As a matter of fact, I really saw that there wasn't a step-by-step guide to do that, so I ended up crafting a three-hour workshop at my farm. It's called Introduction to Biodynamic Gardening, and coincidentally, I'm having one of those workshops tomorrow at Love Apple from 1 to 4 o'clock. People interested in coming to that workshop, it's $45. It can be found on our website, Love Apple Farms with an S, plural, loveapplefarms.com. But that workshop gives you the basic tenets, plus it gives you a step-by-step action plan for doing it. And the first.
So did you take your own class when you started?
Well, I had gone through a whole year of classes up at Steiner to learn how to do it, and done a lot of reading about it, and step-by-step did it. The first thing to do is to start your own compost pile. And that's number one. And number two is to buy a few of the preparations that Steiner talks about and apply them to your land. And we can go through those. It depends on the season which one you're going to do.
So how did you, how should I put this, seduce David Kinch with your tomatoes?
Well, he's has always been a proponent of buying local from local producers, whether it's local sea fishermen, local meat purveyors, or local vegetable.
Get it as close producers. As you can possibly get it.
Well,
it,
that's not as important to him as quality. Mm-hmm. And the longer it takes that product to get to his restaurant, the more degradation of quality occurs. So he understands that most completely with vegetables.
One of the fun things I read about Manresa is that sometimes he serves produce from Love Apple Farms that's so fresh it hasn't been refrigerated yet.
It hasn't seen the inside of a refrigerator, because we'll pick it in the morning and immediately take it over to the restaurant, and then they start to work their magic on it in the kitchen.
That's pretty fresh.
It is. It's very fresh. And when I was in Ben Lomond, we were about half an hour, 35 minutes away from the restaurant. Now we're 15 minutes, so we've reduced that that step, the transportation step, even further.
So it was his tasting your tomatoes, really, that made the difference.
The difference.
As you saw that tomato up in Napa, and thought, there's something here. You took your tomatoes over to Manresa and said, here, try this, right?
I did, and the rest is history. We've had a long partnership relationship.
Good. Well, folks, we're going to have some fun here with the whole notion of biodynamic farming and gardening. What is in that method that makes a difference, that allows Cynthia Sandberg's produce, her tomatoes, to help David Kinch's Manresa restaurant maintain its position as one of the world's top 50 restaurants? What is it in biodynamics? That's the question today. If you would like to join us with some questions about biodynamics, give us a ring. We're at 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson, your host, with Cynthia Sandberg. Oh, we have one of Cynthia's customers, Dan Lawmeyer, sitting in as well with some interesting questions. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, how good can food possibly be? Well, you might try some at Manresa Restaurant in Los Gatos, California. And David Kinch, the master chef over there, really did invent the whole notion of farm to table. And Cynthia Sandberg was there helping him out. Tell us a little bit about how that all evolves. It seems like everywhere in the world now that's a very popular thing to do, for real high-class restaurants to get as close as to their food as possible and to grow that food as well, as good as they can possibly grow it. It used to be, I guess, that restaurants would go get, you know, a head of iceberg lettuce from the boxcar down the road, and that would be the food, but it's not that way anymore.
Well, David didn't invent the concept, but he sure did promulgate it quite a bit in California and nationwide when he and I started our produce partnership, if you will. And he's such an influence in the culinary world in the United States that our partnership, I think, engendered a lot of people thinking, well, if it's good enough for David Kinch, it's good enough for me, and I think that I will try to partner up with one or two small farms and see if I can grow produce or have produce grown for me that helps me differentiate my restaurant from all the other guys out there.
Well, let's try to come to grips with what makes biodynamics so special. We're going to go back and talk a little bit about Rudolf Steiner and perhaps one of his proteges, William Albrecht. These two people looked at the direction of contemporary modern agriculture, which, of course, at 1920s wasn't all that new, but the direction being toward the industrialization of food, the chemicalization of food. And these two characters, Rudolf Steiner to start and William Albrecht to follow up, really looked at this and said, wrong direction. We're losing the food in our food. And so what is it about that Rudolf Steiner said that really captured Cynthia Sandberg's attention and their focus?
I love his theory about a closed-loop system, and that means that the farm tries its best to save its own seed, because if you save seed from generation to generation, not a human generation, but the plant's generation, mm-hmm. from year to year.
And, well, even human generations in some cases, right?
There you go. You're creating or you're helping sustain a seed bank that is specific to your microclimate and your terroir. And that means that if you are always selecting seed that is the best produce from your land, you're going to be able to create a specific cultivar that does the best on your soil and in your climate. We can't
smart seeds almost.
Yeah, right. Smart seeds almost.
Seeds that are intelligent enough to deal with the environment in which it is growing.
Exactly. So that's part of the closed loop system. The other part is trying to create your own fertility on your land rather than buy it and have it trucked in. Both the seed saving and the fertility are tough for us to do, but we endeavor to move toward self-sustainability in that regard. So creating your own fertility means that you must have animals on your land, which is one of the basic differences between biodynamic and organic growing. You have to have animals on your land that produce manure that then goes into your compost piles, and that compost is then put on the land to generate the fertility that's needed for the vegetable crops. And that closes the loop, meaning that you are no longer needing to rely on outside inputs. Very hard to do, especially on a small farm like ours, but we do have many compost piles going. We have many animals on our land, and we're moving toward that self-sustainability. So I really like that idea of closing the loop and ensuring that you're hunkering down and doing the things that will generate your own fertility and you generate your own seed saving. One of our problems is that saving seed is quite the art in the science, and you need to have population distances and, I mean, isolation distances and a population size in order to do that properly. So since we're growing 300 different cultivars of fruit, veg, herbs, and edible flowers for the restaurant every year, we don't always attain the population sample and the isolation distance that's required of saving seed, but we do save the ones that we can off the farm.
Wow. That's closing the loop is the first step. What about the rest of it, the cosmic things that we always hear of Rudolf Steiner, the preparations and the incantations and the phases of the moon? And
well, I don't know about incantations, but I'll explain what the preparations are. They're homeopathic type elixirs, if you will, that are
when you say homeopathic, what does that mean?
It means small quantities.
Okay.
Small quantities of a healthy medicinal type elixir that's applied either to the soil or to the compost or to the plants themselves. And the first one that everybody wants to know about is Prep 500, and that's called the horn manure prep, and that is created by stuffing cow dung into cow horns and then burying it in the earth for 6 months. Between the fall and the spring equinoxes, and then taking that composted dung, if you will, and stirring it for an hour in water, which biodynamizes it.
Describe that, because it's a very interesting process, and for anybody who's actually mixed things, you know, this is where I think it starts to make sense, or started to make sense for me, when you describe the process of mixing.
The mixing is you've got a handful of the composted dung in your hand, and you put it in water that's been heated to a tepid temperature, hopefully well water from your own land, heated to a room temp, if you will, with some sort of an open flame rather than electric flame. And so you have either a camp stove going outside or a propane stove going, some sort of a flame. And then the water is mixed for an entire hour. And it's mixed in a specific way to achieve what's called a vortex within the water. And
so you go round and round and round. And then you reverse.
So that's order and chaos, meaning so as you're moving the water in one direction, you're trying to create a vortex looking like a hurricane tunnel, tornado tunnel inside the bucket. And then you stop that, and that's the chaos. So in all life, Steiner says there's order and there's chaos. And during this hour-long process of stirring, That's where the dynamic part of the equation comes from, and you're supposed to be very contemplative, quiet, thinking good thoughts into the water, thinking how your garden's going to be growing and thriving and improving in health. And at the end of that hour, after you've made this water, infused it with your energy and with the life force energy of everything around it, you take it and you apply it to the land in the fall with either brushes or bamboo sticks, some way to flick it onto the soil all over your farm. And that improves the health and vitality of the soil, because in the fall the earth is breathing in rather than breathing out. And the earth breathes out in the spring. That's why all of your plants are reaching for the sky. And in the fall, the earth is breathing in, and you want to infuse the earth with the terrestrial and the astral forces that are so important to plant growth.
Well, I guess where I started tuning into this is the mixing, because when I was learning how to do Chinese calligraphy, when I was studying Chinese, you have to take your ink. You have a solid block of ink, and you have to grind it. And you don't just grind it, Olson. You start with the circles, and so it's not just that you're doing the ink, it's you're doing yourself. You're bringing yourself into yes. this whole mixture.
Yes.
And thus, the mixture is biodynamic farming and gardening. That's the subject today with Cynthia Sandberg of Love Apple Farms, and you. Join us if you wish, 831-479-1080 is the phone number here. On the food chain, 831-479-1080. What is in the method that makes the magic? Right back. Holy smokes, having so much fun talking here that we forgot we were on a break, and we just kept right on talking, and now we're back. Well, off mic, we were talking a little bit about the phases of the moon, and that's certainly part of biodynamics, but probably part of almost all primitive agricultures. Back when people lived much closer to the land, you know, today farmers and growers live in the city, and they have contractors out in the field, and so they're not so close to plants anymore. But when you're really close to plants and living among them, and they're part of your life, you know that those planetary influences do have an impact on the growth and productivity of plants. Cynthia, when did you start really getting into that element of biodynamicism?
Probably after I'd gone through the Steiner series of workshops, and at the end that we have a week-long intensive where we all stay on the farm for a week up there and practice what we preach, literally. There was a time every morning you're supposed to go out and you have chosen in the field one bean plant that was planted several weeks before, so it's only about 6 inches tall. So you're supposed to go out there as a group, find your bean plant, and sit there and contemplate it for 5 solid minutes. You're supposed to look at this bean plant. And I thought that this is a little bit crazy, where I'm looking at this bean plant. What's it supposed to be doing in front of my eyes? Well, if you're a gardener, you know how quickly bean plants grow in there. And what we're trying to do in those 5 minutes every day for a week is to notice the subtle changes that occur in that plant from morning to morning to morning. And you can actually see that growing. I think there's an old joke about the corn grows so fast that you can actually see it before your eyes. Well, bean plants are similar to that. And if you're contemplative and cautious about it, you can actually notice it. And that's mm-hmm. that's one of the other tenets of biodynamism, is that you are supposed to really be one with your garden, understanding the shifts and the changes and the subtle forces that happen. I know in our garden, if you're not on top of bug infiltration, because when pests come into the garden, sometimes you don't even notice it. You don't understand it. You don't notice it. You don't see it sometimes. Sometimes they're just so small. But unless you're really in there looking under leaves and noticing these subtle clues that will tell you that there's a pest invasion, you're not able to handle it or thwart it. In normal conventional farming, they don't care. They're just taking their crop duster and they don't even have to touch the plant or look underneath the leaves.
They're looking at infrared photos taken from a U2 at 68,000 feet of the field. They see where one part of the field is having trouble, so
there's no humans walking the rows. There's no humans looking at the leaves.
When did you start buying into the notion that the moon and the planets have an impact?
Well, one of the tenets of biodynamic growing is that the moon and the stars and the planets do have an impact on plant growth, and that's really hard for most people to wrap their heads around. But I like to explain it as if we can all agree, and I think that most lucid people can, that the moon has an effect on the tides. You know, I don't think that that's a debatable point. The moon has an effect on the tides. That's a huge body of water on
something
the Earth.
We can all buy right there.
We can all buy that. Well, the main component in plants is water. And if you can also buy into the fact that that the moon has an effect on human behavior, I know that a lot of emergency rooms and police departments see an increased activity on full moon nights. Well, if you can also kind of wrap your head around that, you can start to extrapolate that, you know, if plants are made up mostly of water, maybe that there's an influence of water being pulled and pushed through plants by the moon. And then you can start to think and accept that maybe the cosmic forces have something to do with plant growth. Especially, there's a lot of people on this planet that do believe in astrology.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can believe that being born in under the sign of Taurus in May can impact what happens to us and how we deal with it, then perhaps that also can be extrapolated to plants as well.
And in the whole field of biodynamic gardening and farming, this is the planetary and moon influences are really important, right? They actually have a calendar. How does that work?
They have a calendar that is specific to your geographic area, because my full moon in North America is different from somebody's full moon in South Africa. So each geographic part of the world has a specific biodynamic planting calendar that comes out of Germany every year. And
somebody's sitting there with a supercomputer.
Well, I don't know if she's got a supercomputer or not, but there's definitely somebody there that's creating the calendar every year. And we break up biodynamic growing into four different kinds of plant categories, and they're based on different planets, just like the astrology calendar is. And the idea is that some days of the month, it's better to plant root veg. And then other days of the month, it's better to plant leaf veg. And on other days of the month, it's better to plant fruiting or flower vegetables or produce. So if you follow that calendar, then ostensibly you're going to get increased yield, the number of fruit or leaves that you get, reduced pests and diseases. And if you harvest on those same days, the same designated days, then things like your root crop will store longer and better for you. So that calendar is an interesting calendar. It also has wrap-ups of previous year goings-on. So the 2012 calendar talks about some of the things that happened in 2011 and then predictions for 2012 as well. It's quite interesting and fascinating.
Kind of like the ultimate farmer's almanac, then, the biodynamic farmer's almanac.
Right. A lot of people can accept and appreciate the farmer's almanac, and a lot of that planting is also done by the moon phases, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ancient understanding coupled with a little bit of cosmic energy, terrestrial energy, too.
Now, how would you compare organic farming and biodynamic farming? What would be the difference?
One of the main differences is what I spoke about earlier, the requirement To be a Demeter certified, that's the international certifying body for biodynamics, is Demeter. Some people would pronounce it Demeter. That's the goddess of the harvest. And goddess of fertility is Demeter. So that's the international certifying body. No other organic certifying body is international. There's local organic certifiers. There's regional ones, but there's not international. So.
And how many organic or biodynamic farms are certified?
It's almost 6,000 worldwide.
So this is something that's becoming quite serious. And what I notice is that it's really moving into the field of viticulture.
Exactly.
Vineyards are really going whole hog. Why is that?
They see a subtle distinction in their wine with biodynamic
wine.
And
when it comes to the top wines, subtle distinctions are everything, right?
Exactly. And some of the top, most well-respected wineries in the world practice biodynamics.
Right back with Cynthia Sandberg, Love Apple Farms, Biodynamic Agriculture, and you. Michael Olson here. Do stay tuned. Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host. Today we're talking with Cynthia Sandberg of Love Apple Farms. She, the purveyor of food to David Kinch's Manresa restaurant. It's really a partnership, isn't it, Cynthia?
Well, not a legal partnership, but we have an exclusive relationship with the restaurant. We grow only for them. We do have a giant tomato plant sale that we have customers
well,
come to.
You do a lot of things.
From all over the
You're
country.
You're a true metropolitan farmer.
Yeah, I've followed a lot of, speaking of tenants, I followed a lot of yours, too, in your Metro Farm book. But you have to diversify.
Yeah.
You can't, when you're a small farmer, you cannot go head-to-head with big agriculture and make money selling your green beans for 99 cents a pound. That
nope.
doesn't work. That might work for ConAgra, but it doesn't work for your local farmer to do that. Can't make any money selling green beans for 99 cents a pound.
Yeah, can't grow commodities in competition with the commodity growers.
That are subsidized and can do it at a large scale.
Well, in that regard, let's talk a little bit about the commercialization of biodynamic, because that appears to be what's going on in the world, not only with you, but in the field of viticulture, the wine industry. Some of the top wines now are saying, we are biodynamic. What does that mean when you see a wine that's biodynamic grapes?
Well, it means that they've tried to close their loop, and they compost. They have animals on the farm where they use that compost. They apply the biodynamic preparations to the soil, to the air, to the plants, and to their compost piles. That compost is then put onto their growing areas. They try to save seeds. They have more than a monoculture. Monocultures are not allowed in biodynamics. That's where you're only growing one thing, like soy or corn.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got wild areas around your farm for habitat, for beneficial insects, for wildlife. You're taking care of ensuring that there's no GMO products put into your land and into your animal feed. The other way you close your loop is you try your best to grow the animal feed for your animals. So if we're, for instance, we've got chickens and pigs, even though we do buy feed for them because we haven't yet been able to supply all of their food,
We're
not yet perfect, and that's actually that's one of the beauties of the Demeter standard, is that they understand that no farm is perfect, and it's very difficult to reach all of the points. But there are some deal breakers, and one of the deal breakers for them is using any kind of a GMO product, means that all of our feed for our animals is about three times more expensive. But it also prompts you to try to grow all of your own animal feed. So when we're harvesting for the restaurant, any of our trimmings go to all of our animals, and any of our weeding, that goes to the animals as well. We try to move our animals around the farm. We're fortunate enough now to have 80 acres up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. We move our pigs from pasture to pasture in order for them to forage under the oak trees and get the acorns and forage into the into the weed patches. And
eat the poison oak.
Eat the poison oak, eat the thistles, and then they give us their fabulous manure while they're being moved around from pasture to pasture, and then that increases our fertility as well. So even though our pigs are happy, healthy, wandering around, not in cages, they're also giving us this fabulous product that's enlivening our soil.
It seems like when organic at one time was kind of in the same place that biodynamics is today. And the organic movement gave its word to the federal government for safekeeping. And when that happened, organics became industrialized and, to my way of thinking, much less than it is today. Do you see a danger in biodynamics becoming industrialized? It seems like what Rudolf Steiner was building into the system was enough safeguards that would prevent it from being industrialized, wherein you have to sit and swirl the mixture for an hour. You know, it seems like that almost precludes industrialization.
I know the folks that run the Demeter certifying body in the United States, and they're pretty hardcore about maintaining their standards. When we went through the inspection and the follow-up criteria that we needed to improve on, I knew that it was going to be tough, but I didn't realize how much of a stickler they are. We use potting soil from Gardner and Bloom potting. We really prefer their product, and they were talking about trying to trace back every ingredient in the potting soil all the way back to its origin. So another thing that is a no-no for biodynamics is we can't use any animal products that have come from
industrial CAFOs, right?
CAFOs contain animal feed organisms, and those CAFO type things are, we can't use battery chicken farmed manures. They have to come from sustainable, healthy, humanely treated animals whenever we do bring those manures onto the property.
Does it work?
Yeah, I think so.
It does?
Yeah.
Okay.
We love it.
Do you see in your tomatoes the same thing you saw in that tomato in October up in Napa Valley? You see that?
Absolutely. I'm very proud of them.
Well, folks, we have a few more minutes left with the Love and Love Apple Farm, Cynthia Sandberg, and you. When we come back, I'd really like to ask Cynthia what the magic is in the method. And also, what we can learn, you and I out here in the world who eat that lettuce that comes from someplace else and eat that food, what can you and I take away from biodynamic farming? This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson, Cynthia Sandberg, and you right back. So much more to say and so little time to say it in. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain radio program. We're here with Cynthia Sandberg of Love Apple Farms. She, a biodynamic farmer and gardener, made the transition from a little tiny love apple farm, a tomato farm in Ben Lomond, California, now an 80 acres in the mountains, serving the Manresa restaurant in Los Gatos, California, with biodynamic food. What a great transition in your life to go from corporate attorney to metropolitan farmer. Way to go.
Thank you.
Way to go. So, gosh, what is it in the method, Cynthia, that really makes it for you, that really says that this is real, that biodynamics is real?
I think the discipline of knowing that this is the principles that you want to stick with, and understanding that day by day, what can you do to improve the farm? Day by day, what can you do to make it healthier, more productive, more beautiful? I mean, there's an aesthetic quality to it, too. More worthy of the restaurant that we grow for, because I respect David Kinch so much, and I respect what he's doing, and we're always striving to improve the quality of what we're providing to him. And we welcome folks onto the farm and try to teach them something, too. Like today we have a soap-making class, and tomorrow we have the biodynamic class in addition to a cheese-making class. So we'll have a beekeeping class and a chicken-keeping class and a compost and vermiculture class where we're teaching folks how to make a proper compost pile and also keep worms. And that's closing the loop for folks, even if they can't have an 80-acre farm or even a 2-acre farm. If they just have a small
backyard,
they can still do some of these things to close their loop. They can recycle, they can have a compost pile, or they can have a little worm bin that they feed the kitchen scraps to instead of grinding them up in their garbage disposal. Put those things are precious. Your banana peels are precious. That's a good name for a book. My precious banana peels. Do something positive with them.
So what can we take away, those of us who live out here in the world of industry, what can we take away from biodynamics that can really enrich our lives?
Compost, recycle, save your seeds, have a little garden, even a 4-foot by 12-foot patch, choose a sunny patch. Even if you don't have a patch of ground, put pots in. You know, get a Knox box, get a garden box that you can move around and follow the sun in your backyard. Get some containers out there and fill it with fabulous, good potting soil. Start your compost pile and grow stuff.
Cynthia Sandberg, how did the Love Apples change your life?
Well, the world does not need another lawyer, but the world does need a lot more farmers.
Wow. There she is, Cynthia Sandberg, the Love and Love Apple Farms. You might look her up at, what is it, loveapplefarms.com?
That's right.
Who knows? Jump on a jet, fly out, and take one of her classes and get a taste of the food, of what real food tastes like. And what do you think out there? Do you think that there really is something in this biodynamics? Or are you you're still skeptical, aren't you, Cynthia?
I'm always researching.
Always
and I'm always looking. Needing to be proven right or wrong.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. And remember to stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio. And always remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.